Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We go immediately to Brazil. Two big elections in the New World in this calendar year, and Brazil in the fall describes a battlefield that may contribute to an understanding of all of Latin American democracies and this apparent trend that we're witnessing these last months, and really since in the recovery from the pandemic, of democracies leaning left or going left, authoritarian left in some fashion. I'm using general language because it doesn't have one name. Sometimes you're called a Marxist. Sometimes you're called a socialist. Sometimes you're called a strongman. It describes a moving story. And we begin in Brazil because Lula da Silva, doing very well in the polls, is a previous president. However, what happened in between his time early in the century and now is that he was caught up in a scandal called the car wash scandal and jailed for some time in that scandal. Recently, however, the man who was the judge of the car wash scandal said to be a candidate possibly for the presidency, decided not to run in this cycle. When Judge Moro dropped out, the polls immediately improved for the serving president, the incumbent Bolsonaro, against Lula da Silva. Not closing within a margin of error, but certainly there was a change indicating that in Brazil, this large, active, extremely visionary republic, there is a population that's neither Bolsonaro, associated with the far right, or Lula da Silva, associated with the far left. Whether that's proved or not, that's how the headlines read. This large middle wandering around in between. So, Professor, I come to you to understand first the car wash scandal and how it continues to resonate in Brazil, even after all these years and after what appears to be the vindication of Lula da Silva. He was released from jail. I know sometimes they say technicality, but the courts are about technical matters. It's not a moral decision. It's the fair play of the law. So what happened in car wash that keeps it part of the conversation in 2022? Good day to you.
First of all, as you pointed out, the car wash scandal built on something that all Brazilians fundamentally knew, which was the endemic corruption in the Brazilian system. The big state companies and institutions like their construction company Odebrecht and others. But what happened, what started out as a relatively minor investigation, Lava Jato or car wash, ended up exposing a variety of people, from people involved with Odebrecht itself to a number of different politicians. And in the end, ironically, Odebrecht was obliged to published a list of people in other countries that it had bribed, which meant that the spillover touched different political and other leaders across different Latin American countries. But as you pointed out, kind of one of the heroes in the story was at the time Judge Sergio Moro, who again was seen at the time as very straightforward, very honest and incorruptible. And so that in an environment where Brazil is seen as widely corrupt accounted for much of his popularity while Brazilians were losing faith in politicians. Now, as you also pointed out, Moro has been trailing in the recent polls behind both Lula and Jair Bolsonaro. And so I think at the end of the day, Moro decided that this was not his time to run. So he withdrew. On a technicality in Brazilian electoral law, that means that by changing parties, he will not be eligible until the next presidential election, at which time he may be more competitive, depending on what the field is. But because so many of the Moro votes and the Moro popularity had been in part due to his last major high-profile case, which was when they found that Lula da Silva himself had accepted a beachfront apartment, some reservations. It was a relatively minor bit of corruption, given the corruption that others in Brazil had engaged in this. But it appeared that they got him, and so those who had seen Lula as corrupt really had rallied around Moro. And so when Moro pulled out, a certain amount of those people who just really were with him because they thought he had taken down Lula and they didn't like the corruption of Lula naturally have gravitated to Jair Bolsonaro. And so, as you pointed out, that meant that that now, at least in the first round, Bolsonaro is only down by about 15 percentage points in the polls. But if it goes to the second round, Lula still beats Bolsonaro 55 percentage points to 34 percentage points with Joao Doria and Ciro Gomes someplace still in the smaller numbers. So at this point, especially because you have such high negatives towards Bolsonaro himself, about 61% negatives versus 42% negatives for Lula, although you see that the exit of Moro is a lot of his supporters have gone over to Bolsonaro almost by default, it still looks like it's Lula's election to lose.
The road ahead is not about car wash. The road ahead is about food security and fuel security worldwide. We're told that Brazil feeds about a billion people. It's sugarcane crop, it's wheat, it's farming, all of that. The meat's out of Brazil. The fertilizer shortage, why President Bolsonaro was in Moscow right prior to the invasion of Ukraine. The fertilizer shortage is upon us. The fertilizer may be available eventually out of Canada and the United States and India, but there's a distribution problem. So the immediate challenge for the president, Mr. Bolsonaro, and Mr. Da Silva, if he wins this year, is food security and also maintaining a balance between the agricultural sector in Brazil, which I'm told increasingly chews up the Amazon, and people who regard the Amazon as critical to the health of the planet. Does Lula da Silva, the new version, the post-car wash version, speak to all this? Is he about the future, or is he a sentimental favorite? And Bolsonaro has alienated the, I would say, the spontaneous voter. So how to regard Da Silva if he is to be the man of the future?
In many ways, Da Silva's popularity beyond just his very amicable personal style has to do with the nostalgia of Brazilians. Lula was president from 2003 to 2010, a time in which commodity prices were relatively high. Brazil had a lot of money to throw around. One very popular a cash transfer program for the poor, Bolsa Família, that was seen as bringing a number of people out of poverty. Although, ironically, Jair Bolsonaro has now instituted his own cash transfer program, which is being done at a scale even greater than that Lula had pioneered. But you're right, the kind of neglected traditional farming vote and agricultural vote, that conservative strain within Brazil has traditionally gone to Jair Bolsonaro and probably will still continue to do so. But you were also absolutely correct that in Brazil, as in Argentina, as in Peru and a number of other places, one of the byproducts of the stresses of COVID-19, which wreaked just unprecedented economic damage, but is now being compounded by the effects of the war in Ukraine, which have elevated food prices, have elevated petroleum prices, have created shortages of nitrate-based fertilizers. These repercussions are going to continue to marginalize populations across Latin America. It's going to play in the Brazil elections. It's going to play elsewhere. And so that's something, and Brazil is struggling even more with it, as you pointed out, because it also has had record unprecedented droughts, which have impacted the crops in certain places. And this will be kind of increasingly critical, what's going to happen as we move into, at least in certain parts of South America, the May beginning of the next major planting season.
Peru. We go immediately to Peru because there's trouble in Peru having to do with governance. President Castillo, has lost the favor of the people who elected him, having to do with those price spikes that we're seeing worldwide in food and fuel. And there was disturbance in the streets of Lima and other cities these last days, so much so that the president, I believe, deployed the military and at first imposed a curfew, but that was lifted. However, now that it's several days later, we have this from Reuters. In the hilly slums of Peruvian capital Lima, soup kitchens struggle to feed some of the Andean nation's poorest and most vulnerable residents, cutting proteins and loading up on carbohydrates as food prices soar. How so? For years, goes Reuters, soup kitchens offered lunch at one sol, which is the equivalent of 27 cents U.S. Now community leaders have been forced to charge 1.5 sols, so a 50% increase, and we're looking at an increase that no one can afford. This speaks to food security throughout Latin America, complicating the matter in Peru. So first, let's be specific. Castillo is a new politician. He's making mistakes. Perhaps they can be forgiven, but perhaps the legislature will go after him again. He just survived an impeachment vote. Is there a connection between these soup kitchens, the national strikes by the truck drivers because of the price of fuel, and Castillo's reign? Or does he remain in power because there's no better choice? How do you see it, Professor?
Really a perfect storm brewing that is putting even more pressure on Castillo and the government than there already was. As you pointed out, on the one hand, what has been happening with the war in the Ukraine has fed into food prices. That's impacted the price of things like chicken, which, as you noted from that article, has made it difficult for even soup kitchens feeding the marginalized in the slums around Lima to be able to feed the poorest. But in addition, they're raising gas prices. You have a very large informal sector in Peru, and you have truckers who are forced often to buy their own gas. And so just the ability of those truckers to make their livelihood with gas prices rising was one of the things that had led to the trucker blockages. But again, a lot of frustration with the inability of the Castillo government to forge a more effective policy towards the control of inflation. Although it's only about 7% right now in Peru, it's being felt in certain key things like food and petroleum, and especially among some of the more marginalized populations. And so, ironically, although Pedro Castillo has been traditionally most popular with some of those marginalized populations, especially in the provinces like Cajamarca, who at one point voted for him with almost 80% approval. That approval among those core supporters has now dropped. You have also the way that he handled those initial protests really undercut even farther frustration with him. So again, there was the curfew that he imposed, which only led to more violence. Now he's deployed the army because in traditional fashion, those truckers and other workers have begun to block highways, but those highway blockages are compounding the situation with shortages of supply. And so what you really have is a cauldron of social frustration and social protest, which indeed is related to the war in the Ukraine. But that frustration is now also contributing to those who would like to get rid of Castillo, who are frustrated with a whole line of previous other misactions, which are seen as arising from a combination of inexperience and poor policymaking and poor choices of ministers, and most recently some relatively serious allegations of corruption. But again, the irony is that you have this cauldron of frustration in the middle of a situation where the left, people like Vladimir Soron, have not been able to fully recruit him. He wants to be his own man, but the right doesn't want him to go forward. You have a coalition of members of Congress and the right that want to bring him down. And yet at the same time, all of Congress knows that if they vote him down, they themselves lose their sinecure in office, and you go to something perhaps even worse. And so the irony is that despite all this frustration, even the votes of no confidence to get rid of him on what they call moral incapacity have failed. And so Peru is kind of stuck right now with the temperature rising both in the streets as well as with those sharpening their knives within the Peruvian political system. So it's a very worrisome situation for many following Peruvian politics.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. He's the Latin American research professor at the Strategic Studies Institute. We turn now to the other large election in the New World in this calendar year, Colombia, and then an odd vote in Mexico. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.